Hey, what is up, guys? Dr. Dale here. All right, so I'm super excited to be starting this series with you. What's the series? The series is Diverse Medicine, and it's based on my book, Diverse Medicine, Building a Stronger and Healthier Nation. So this is my 12th book that I've written, that I've published, actually. I've written more, but this is the 12th book that I've actually put out for you guys to see in the public right now. And I'm really excited about this book because while I think all my other books are phenomenal, could have great impact, this one is kind of the pinnacle of my body of work in diversity in the field of medicine to date, right? So the book's not necessarily about my body of work, what I've done, but the book is a combination of the things that I've learned, my perspectives, et cetera, that I believe are noteworthy. I believe they're noteworthy. I've spent a lot of time, a lot of thought in this area doing a lot of work that I would hope would make some people proud. And this book is kind of the perspectives that I've been left with after doing all that work for so long now, okay? So what I'd like to do is go through each chapter one at a time and give my commentary on that chapter, a little bit of a summary, not too much detail because obviously the detail is gonna be within the pages of the book. However, I do wanna provide a commentary and a little bit of summary. So before diving into that, I would love to ask you to please, please, please support by grabbing a copy of the book if you have not. I know some of you guys watching this would have already got your copy. The book did release at the number one position on Amazon and health policy, so I was super excited about that. So thank you to everybody who did get a copy of the book. Thank you. If you haven't gotten a copy, I just ask that you please do consider supporting by grabbing a copy. We'll put the Amazon link around here somewhere. Just grab a copy of the book, shoot me a message, let me know you got a copy of it. That way I can respond and say thank you for doing that. All right, so let's dive in. So I'm gonna start with just chapter one, and we'll do just chapter one this video. And chapter one is called Speak Up. It's called Speak Up. Off the bat, I'll just tell you so you understand my perspective on things to be overall in life, is I'm a person of Christian faith, right? So I view the world, my worldview tends to be a biblical worldview. At least I do my best to approach the world from that perspective. And there's a verse in the Bible that sticks with me that I believe drives a lot of the work that I do. And that verse is this, and this is how I start the book off. It's Proverbs 31, 8 through 9. This is the very first thing in the book, chapter one. It says, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy." Proverbs 31, 8 through 9. That verse right there has been something that has propelled me, kept me going in this journey to improve healthcare. And specifically, when I think about improving healthcare, it's improve healthcare for everybody. However, there are disparities. There are people who are poor and needy that need to be spoken for, right? And that's what Proverbs 31, 8 through 9 is asking us to do. I start the book off with that as a reminder to everybody reading the book, no matter what your background, is that the right thing to do is to speak up and to help those who are struggling to help themselves, right? Who are struggling to help themselves. At times in, you know, America, there's a great divide, and that divide is saying, hey, well, they didn't do what they had to do to get to the position where they don't have to be poor and needy. Well, and I'm saying there's verses in the Bible to say you don't work, you don't eat, essentially paraphrasing, you don't work, you don't eat, right? I understand those verses, but this verse right here is clear. Speak up, right? Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. Defend the rights of the poor. It didn't say, how did they become poor and needy? It just says, defend the rights of the poor and needy. Speak up for them. So that's what I'm doing, and that's what this book is based on. So I started the book off by telling a story, and it's when I was younger in my medical life, right, when I was still a trainee. And essentially what happened was, and I remember this, what happened was I was on a cardiology service. So taking care of patients with heart failures, you know, STEMIs and STEMIs, all sorts of various heart conditions. But I remember one particular patient who did have heart failure and who wasn't doing too well. And, you know, we were giving him all that we had, right? So he was on the pressure therapies, the inotropes. He was on, I can't remember if he was on a VAD or not, but whatever. He was on all sorts of super advanced therapies and things weren't looking good for him. And got to the point where we were like, hey, this guy's gonna need a heart transplant. And I remember just thinking, okay, yeah, good. He's gonna get to the point, he's gonna get a heart, things are gonna get better. He'll be out the hospital. It might take a while, it might be a journey, he might have to fight for it, but you know, we can at least get him going that direction. And one day during rounds, we're walking by his bedside, the question comes up, what about heart transplant? Nah, he wouldn't qualify, too many social issues. And that was it. That was the entirety of the discussion that I was present for, at least, pertaining to this gentleman getting a heart transplant. I mean, he was an African-American gentleman, and this is a time where I could have spoken up, but perhaps I felt as though I didn't know enough, or I wasn't in a position of authority to do so. I did not speak up. But I remember thinking, man, goodness gracious, this patient is dying. The one thing that we can think of to save his life is a heart transplant. And we gave him all of 10 seconds worth of consideration for a heart transplant. We didn't even advance him to the heart transplant committee so they can make the evaluation, do the full thing. And I just thought, you know, would that have happened in different situations, right? Does diversity have anything to do with that? Now, years removed from that, right? Over decades removed from that, I can now look back and say, all right, I know there are disparities in transplant world. Yeah, that's, we know that now, the literature's there, but at that time, I didn't even know that. At that time, this was the perspective of somebody who was young, just trying to figure things out, and all I could do was ask myself, like, man, is that, did we just hit on that the right way? Here we have a gentleman who needs a heart, and we didn't give him good consideration. He's African-American, right? He's a black man, I'm a black man. If my attending were black, would my attending have given that more consideration? Would we have advanced him to the committees? All sorts of things started going through my mind. And I'm not saying that we made the right decision, the wrong decision, I don't know. My attendings, these individuals were so much more, so many more years of experience than I had, and I still have, right? They're older than I am significantly, that maybe they just knew, they had the gestalt, like he's not gonna qualify, and maybe that's good enough. But nonetheless, that sparked something in me to say, hey, I wanna pay more attention to this idea of disparities and diversity in the field of healthcare. And honestly, that's the genesis of a lot of the work that I do now today, right? That moment, remember that, saying there are disparities out there, we need representation in the field of medicine to make sure things like that don't happen inappropriately. That might have been appropriate, that's not the point I'm making here, but just the general idea that there are disparities in the world when it comes to things like transplant, all sorts of healthcare conditions, right? But this particular example, when it comes to transplant, would he have gotten a better shot at life had somebody taken a moment to say, hey, wait, no, let's not rush that decision. Let's put it through the committee. Let's see what all can be done to see if he does qualify. So the next section in the book, in this chapter, goes to the war against diversity. This is something that's huge. This is something that really bothers me, really bothers me. Diversity has, in a sense, become a potty word, right? People don't want to say diversity. Comes on TV, diversity, oh no, diversity. Nobody wants to talk about diversity. It's become something that at times you almost don't even want to bring up because you feel as though you'll be attacked just for saying that. There is a war against diversity in America. And it's an unfortunate thing because I truly believe that diversity is beautiful. I truly believe that when we get to heaven, the Bible talks about, you know, nations, right? It's not just one nation, it's nations, people from nations, all nations present. Right, it's a diverse thing. It's a diverse thing there. And nowadays though, in the United States of America, when you start talking about diversity, instead of bringing people together, which is funny, right? The word diversity, you would think, hey, let's bring people together. It causes a divide. It causes a divide and they view you as, oh, you're the person who does all the diversity work, who talks about, you want diversity, ooh. And diversity has almost become a negative thing. And for a variety of reasons, but we won't necessarily go into that. So the challenge in that is for individuals like myself who see the value in diversity in healthcare, not just healthcare, in all fields really, for individuals like myself who see this challenge now, it makes it harder for us to go about accomplishing things. It makes it harder for the patients ultimately, because diversity is something important. We'll talk about it later in the book, but diversity actually has real, meaningful, and now measurable benefits that we're seeing. But then when there's a war against it, when there's an onslaught against it, when people are fighting against certain things in diversity, when people are scared to say that, hey, you know, I'm on this side where I want to see this happen, it makes it hard to get things done. And there's a war against diversity. And in the book, one of the things I do in this chapter is I go into the Fisher case, Fisher versus the University of Texas. And with the things that we start to see, you know, now we're in the time period, affirmative action, all these things being challenged, being removed. There's an intentional attack on things about promoting diversity across the United States in professional fields specifically, right? And that's sad, and I believe that it's the wrong thing to do. I believe that rather than attacking and eradicating, getting rid of all these programs, I believe that the thing that we need to do is figure out perhaps how to do them better. Yeah, I do agree. There is room for improvement in many of these programs, right? We just need to figure out how to do them better and not necessarily get rid of them. But that's what the next section is in the book, The War Against Diversity. I think it's something that people need to take a moment and actually realize, hey, it is under attack, right? People are fighting completely against it. And that's something that ultimately, unfortunately, I believe could hurt the United States of America rather than helping to bolster things up and make things better for all of us. Because those people, like, you know, when I argue for diversity, I'm arguing for America, right? I'm arguing for making things better. I'm arguing for saying, okay, let me take a moment to think about, specifically in healthcare, let me think about the healthcare landscape. What do we need? What is one of the biggest things that's missing that could get us in trouble? And that's diversity. It's diversity. And I don't want to get to the point where we're in trouble before we realize, hey, we should have been working on this quite some time ago and really focused on working towards it rather than working against it. I want to read this section right here that I wrote here. This is the last paragraph in that section, The War on Diversity. All right, ultimately, the war on diversity in the medical field is not a clash between different races or ideologies, but a battle for the future of healthcare in America. A battle for the future of healthcare in America. This itself is intertwined with the future of the nation as a whole. And to secure this future, we must collaborate to promote diversity and inclusivity across all aspects of healthcare, ranging from the hiring practices to research initiatives. Contrary to some beliefs, it's worth noting that this can be achieved relatively fairly. We'll talk about this more later, but this idea of diversity initiatives not being fair, things can be achieved in a relatively fair fashion. This is what I meant when I was referring to let's do things better, perhaps, but let's not get rid of things. The real challenge lies in determining what constitutes fairness and developing criteria for what constitutes true merit. We talk about that later in the book too. That's one of the most important parts, I believe, is understanding what is true merit. When people get into these arguments about diversity initiatives not being fair, I believe it's because we don't have a good, clear definition of what true merit is. And people have different goals and duration for it when it pertains to what merit is. Once we can address these questions and incorporate them into our decision-making processes, we will be on the right track to improving healthcare, healthcare and other industries. We've got to figure this out, all right? And particularly the war on diversity part is what I'm referring to. We have got to figure this out because at the end of the day, if we keep on clashing, more divide, that makes us more vulnerable. And there will be repercussions for that are unnecessary. Next section in this chapter is about America's health paradox. And this is a simple reminder to everybody. Everybody knows this, right? But America spent so much money on healthcare. We spent so much money trying to get the best technology, the best hospitals, the best medications, right? The best med schools, all that stuff. Yet we're still not doing too great in healthcare outcomes, right? We're still not doing too great in health outcomes. That's something that we need to fix. And I believe the reason I bring that up in this chapter, I believe that what we need is a prescription for diversity. I believe that when you get more diversity, you get more thoughts, more ideas, more perspectives, right? When that happens, that can help with America's health paradox. That can help with the fact that we're spending so much money, but we're not seeing the outcome. Because we do know, and we'll get into this also, we do know that when you have increased diversity, outcomes are better. Increased diversity, things can be more affordable. So many benefits of diversity. And once we start getting that and focusing on that, and instead of fighting against it, start promoting it, I believe we'll start to see our health outcomes improve. I want to read one last little brief thing from here that I've got marked here for you guys, and then we'll wrap up this chapter here. So I wrote, I must state this clearly. Your skin color does not determine how great of a clinician you can become. I'm going to repeat that. Your skin color does not determine how great of a clinician you can become. So in no shape, form, fashion am I saying that because I'm black, I can take care of black patients better. I'm not saying that. Right? We'll get into this more in the book. If all doctors in the world were of one race, I wouldn't have a problem with that, as long as they could practice with complete compassion, fairness, non-bias, and love towards everyone. However, achieving that level of practice is extremely challenging, and I don't believe society is capable of it at this point in time. In fact, I don't believe human nature allows us to fully achieve it. As long as self-interest exists, disparities will persist. This is precisely why we need adequate diversity in the healthcare workforce. So that's my argument. That's the foundational argument for me in all the work that I do with diversity. It's a foundational argument, right? So that's chapter one, speak up. Next chapter, which we'll touch on in this video, is huge, super important chapter. And that's achieving excellence, not just equity. Achieving excellence, not just equity. People talk about diversity and they think we're talking about, oh, let's be fair, let's be equitable, let's give equal and equitable, all that stuff. Diversity is about achieving excellence. All right, thanks for getting down with me on chapter number one. I'm excited to dive into chapter number two with you all. But again, please, if you have not bought a copy of the book, please just click on the Amazon link, buy a copy, support me and the work I'm doing, support our diversity initiatives. And read the book. It's just a really good book. I believe you'll truly enjoy it. You can get it done over a weekend. And shoot me a message. Let me know if you get the book. Drop a review. Whatever you want to do. Thanks for watching. Chapter one. Commentary. Love you.